Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying video, I am bringing you three horrifying backroom stories. What is the backrooms, you may ask? Well, stick around and find out, and subscribe. Now sit back, relax, dim those lights, and let's get spooky. Holy shit, Katrina said excitedly, slowly stepping forward in the dim hallway. The walls and ceiling were painted the color of green baby puke. The floor had large, irregular stains sunken into its once white carpet. With all the detritus and dust stuck to it, the carpet now looked more of a smoky gray. Water spots larger than a man grew patches of black, orange, and white molds, their twisting tendrils intertwined like the branches of a fungal jungle. The entire hallway smelt like old, rotting wood and wet algae. But none of this caught Katrina's cold gaze. It was the part of the wall that caught her attention now. It seemed totally solid. She walked confidently up to it, swirling an index finger through the illusion. She watched in wonder as her wrist disappeared, and then her elbow. She pulled it out, and the wall seemed like wisps of smoke around her skin. I could see the ghostly material reforming, swirling like mist until it had entirely reformed the illusion within a couple of seconds. How do we know anyone in there is still alive? Our team leader Snake asked, his tanned Neanderthal face splitting into a scowl. He kept playing with the sharp dagger he always carried around with him, the polished wooden grip flashing as he threw it into the air and caught the spiraling knife in his other hand. "They're probably not," I said, feeling adrenaline coursing through my veins. I'd never been sent on a mission into the Badlands before. The director had sent a few other teams into these anomalies that kept popping up in random spots around town, sections where the wall or floor appeared solid but, in truth, they were anything but. This anomaly had been found in the basement of an abandoned office building by some electrician 24 hours earlier. I would have loved to see the look of surprise on his face when his hand first disappeared through the seemingly solid wall. He had called the owner of the building and his son to tell them that something odd was happening in this crappy abandoned place. The owner, a cantankerous old man with the generosity of a miser and the shrewdness of a Machiavellian prince, decided he wanted to go investigate and find out if the building he had gotten for pennies on the dollar had something valuable hidden away in its depths. He had probably thought he had found extra floors and rooms that could drastically increase its value. But whatever they had thought, the father and son never came back after they disappeared through the mirage of solid wall. The electrician had ended up waiting a couple of hours before he finally called the police, who had arrived and examined the scene, totally baffled. Then they called our agency and locked the place down until our team could get there. It's a go, Snake said as a command came in through his headset. We all had an earbud and connected mouthpieces that would connect back to central headquarters. In the past, though, the connection had gone out when other teams had gone deep enough into the Badlands. I felt a rising sense of exhilaration and anxiety ring through my body like a struck bell as Snake flicked the safety off of his rifle and disappeared through the soggy basement wall into the unknown. Katrina winked at me, her blazing eyes the same brown color as the soil in our town's graveyard. She followed quickly behind Snake. I went last.
Shh, watch your backs in there,
the director said through the earbuds.
Shh, the last anomaly killed three of our team members, and we weren't able to recover their bodies. I don't want to see you three suffer the same fate.
I rolled my eyes. What an inspirational speech, Katrina muttered as she passed through the wall. I could never get used to the feeling of passing through apparently solid structures into the Badlands. I felt all the hairs rising up on my body, my skin sizzling as if a bolt of lightning were about to descend on me as fast as death itself. An overwhelming odor of ozone surrounded me. My vision swam through seemingly liquid layers of baby puke green. They flowed in strange overlapping patterns, moving outwards like the ripples on a pond. It felt like I could actually see every quantum cloud as energy passed by in all directions at tremendous speeds. And then I was through. In front of me, I saw Katrina and Snake running forward in their black military gear through a dark hallway. Fluorescent lights flickered above us, dimly illuminating short patches of the wall, but entire lengths of it were plunged into near total blackness. I flicked on my headlamp, seeing Katrina and Snake doing the same. I saw an endless hallway of smooth gray stone looming in front of us. Some fetid black slime dripped down the outside of them. Tiny writhing larvae covered the floors, like red maggots with pale white eyes on stalks. I felt their bodies crunching like acorns under my boots as I continued following the team deeper into the stone halls of the Badlands. I glanced back, but the part of the wall we had came through was gone. The hall stretched out in that direction, quickly disappearing into the darkness. Shit, we've got blood, Snake said, putting his hand up and stopping us suddenly. I looked down. The white glare of the headlamp showed fresh streaks of blood leading off into an intersecting corridor. It opened up into what looked like an office room from an apocalypse.
Shh. If you find both of them dead, team, just turn around and head back.
The director's deep voice boomed through the headset. How are we supposed to get back when the door we came in disappeared? I asked. Snake shook his head. There's more doors where we came in, he said.
Shh. Wherever there is one anomaly, there is usually several more. Shh.
The director added.
Shh. Just remember the way you came in.
Broken tables with rusted and destroyed computers on them stretched across a space a size of a football field. I looked up, but the light from the headlamp wouldn't even reach the ceiling. It was strange seeing the smooth stone architecture of the Badlands combined with smashed monitors and waterlogged office desks. In many of the chairs, mummified corpses sat, their grinning skulls staring up blankly into the shadows above them. They all had the same sort of clothing. As I moved closer, I saw they wore black shirts and sweatpants, brand new black and white Nike Decades and armbands reading, Servants of Moloch. Some strange sigil had been emblazoned on the front of each of their shirts in bright red cloth, a pointed bull's head with smoke coming from its grinning fanged mouth.
Well, this is something new, Katrina said,
prodding one of the mummified corpses with the tip of her rifle. The entire head fell off, sending up a cloud of brown dust that smelled vaguely of cinnamon. Snake frowned down at the corpses. "What is Moloch?" Snake asked, staring at the skeletal remains in front of him. "Is that some sort of cult or something?" Katrina just shook her head. He glanced at me, as I knew tons of random knowledge. "It's an ancient god, though the name also refers to the ritual sacrifices," I said, trying to remember back to what I had heard about North African history. Thousands of years ago, people in Carthage, or Tunisia as they call it nowadays, used to worship a bull god named Moloch. They even made huge metal statues of Moloch that they could light fires in.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at freestylelibre.us.
For prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Inside, Moloch would have its metal hands reaching out to the crowd as flames erupted from its eyes and smoke from its nostrils and mouth. Then the crowd would begin offering infants and small lambs to the bull god, placing the screaming children on the scalding metal hands. The priests and others would have drums pounding and people chanting during these sacrifices to help down out the dying, agonizing cries of the infants. Katrina gave a short bark of cynical laughter, but Snake looked slightly sickened. "That's effed up, brother," Snake said. "Where do you even hear about this kind of crap?" I shrugged. "Well, it was in Dexter books," I explained simply, but Snake didn't seem to get the reference. "If they're that stupid to sacrifice their own children," Katrina said, a crooked smile still playing across her lips. "Then it sounds like they're doing humanity a favor. Natural selection, you know. The children probably would have been as dumb and blind as the parents." "That's sick," Snake said condescendingly. She only shrugged blithely. I glanced at the trail of fresh blood that swept through the massive chamber and out to the other side. A deep roaring sound erupted from the far end where rows of splintered and burned desks were gathered. "We'll keep following the blood trail," Snake said, his flat eyes gleaming darkly as he surveyed the room. "Once we confirm that both the owner and his son are dead, we could just head back and report this." "As if it's ever that simple," I grumbled, but Snake didn't even look up. His finger was tightly curled around the M4 carbine's trigger. He kept his gaze focused on the distant end of the chamber. "Simon, watch our backs," Snake said to me, motioning to Katrina to advance towards the source of the sound. We followed the trail of blood forward past the half-burnt and splintered rubble littering the stone floor. Up ahead, I saw a body laying on the floor with its legs facing us. It looked like someone in an expensive gray suit, and they weren't moving. Snake slowly advanced on it, with Katrina a few paces behind him. I kept checking our backs, but the headlamp sent shadows skittering across the massive chamber. In the dancing and swirling of the darkness, I thought I glimpsed something twisting and pale dragging itself forward. I kept checking those areas, but if something was stalking us, it kept itself well hidden. I could never confirm whether my eyes were just playing tricks on me or whether the creature of the Badlands already knew we were here.
Oh, shit.
Katrina swore softly ahead of me. I looked down at the body, seeing that the corpse's head was totally gone. In its place, a ragged patch of bloody, torn flesh stretched, slowly dribbling clotted blood. The trail of blood ended at the body. But where's the sun? I asked, looking around. Why is there only one blood trail and one body here? Maybe Moloch took him, Katrina said jokingly. As if in confirmation, another shrieking roar ripped its way through the massive chamber. It traveled slowly like the aftershocks of an earthquake. The granite floors beneath our feet trembled and Katrina nearly lost her footing. I stumbled forward, giving her a steadying hand, but I felt like a sailor on a stormy swept ship for a few moments. Snake continued to advance towards the source of the roaring, as sturdy and single-minded as ever. We left the decapitated body of the father behind. The shadows grew thicker and deeper. The chambers started to narrow. I felt the stone floors begin to flop downwards. We were heading into the bowels of the Badlands. We descended for what felt like a very long time, jogging forward with our full gear and Kevlar vests on. Our headlamps seemed to grow weaker and penetrate the darkness less and less as we descended, as if the shadows were a living thing consuming the light in its faceless mouth. After about 20 minutes of this, the scenery started to change all around us. Statues hewn into the granite walls towered over us on both sides. Some showed twisting, eyeless creatures that crab-walked on all fours. Whatever sculptor had done this had captured their essence perfectly. I could almost see the statue taking off in my mind, skittering across the floor. But even more disturbingly, these statues reminded me of the barely glimpsed horrors that I thought I had seen back near the mummified corpses. The floors and walls had started to change as well into a glassy, obsidian-like material. The air grew warmer and more stifling, as if we were descending into an active volcano.
Holy crap, what is that?
Snake asked, sounding extremely disturbed about something. I'd been staring at the statues on both sides of us, periodically checking our backs. I felt eyes on us, but I hadn't seen any signs of something stalking us. I looked up to where Snake was pointing with the barrel of his gun. Stretching across the narrow tunnel stood a blackened metal statue of a bull. It loomed at least 30 feet into the air. In its belly, I saw a raging inferno, the flames writhing and dancing in cyclonical currents. The bull's eyes glowed a bright red like freshly spilled blood. Its gaping maw grinned, showing off countless needle-sharp silver teeth. It had its giant blackened hands extending towards us, like a child showing off a toy. But in its smoky metal palms was no toy. Instead, I saw the burnt, smoldering bodies of many infants. A roaring emanated from the statue's mouth, deafening as a gunshot. I covered my ears, turning away from the horrid sight. Even Snake and Katrina looked taken back. Then the statue moved, its head lowering, its eyes blazing, its mouth slowly opening with the whirling of many gears. From somewhere deeper in the obsidian tunnel, I heard drums pounding and people chanting in some strange and ancient language.
What's going on there, team?
The director asked as we backpedaled quickly. The statue's thick, clawed legs extended so that its head nearly scraped the ceiling. Its grin seemed to widen as it stared directly at me. My heart froze in my chest. I raised my gun, but it felt feeble and small compared to the beast of metal and fire.
No, no, help me!
A small voice cried out from behind the beast. I saw men in black robes dragging out a small boy from behind Moloch, still chanting. Behind them, cultists dressed in the same garb as the mummified corpses rang bells and bashed drums. The cacophony nearly drowned out the screaming of the child. The priests and cultists froze when they saw us. The singing and drums immediately cut out, leaving only the panicked screams of the boy. The priests stood around the bull god, their faces pale and expressionless. Many of the cultists had signs of lobotomies on their foreheads, deep, straight scars dug into both sides of their frontal lobes. They stared like sheep with open mouths, their eyes glassy and rolling. "Give us the child," Snake hissed, his voice menacing and full of venom. The priest holding the boy only laughed. "And what will you do if I do not?" he asked in a strange accent. "This is the will of Moloch. No one defies the great god and giver and taker of life." I looked up at Moloch, but the blackened statue looked just like another hunk of metal again. Its eerie mechanical movements had stopped. "I'll start by murdering all your cultist friends," Snake said, his eyes flashing. He raised his rifle, tightening his finger on the trigger. "I'll give you 3 seconds to..." At that moment, something...
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, or prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at freestylelibre.us.
For prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
And smashed into Snake from behind, cutting him off. I spun around, seeing dozens of naked, pale, twisting bodies crawling on the floor, their lidless eyes gleaming like cataracts. They all had the same insane rictus smile frozen on their rotting faces. They were only the size of a small child, but they moved fast. I cursed myself for not watching our backs. Snake fought with the thing as he fell. I moved forward to help him, but at that moment, many things happened at the same time. The boy bit the priest's hand. The priest holding him gave a surprised cry of pain and released the boy, who sprinted towards us. Moloch also chose that inopportune moment to spring to life, still glaring down at me with those eyes the color of a slit throat. His rhinoceros-like feet pounding the ground, his thousands of pounds of metal and fire shaking the floor with every step. I froze for a moment, the gun held limply in my hand. Then all of my training and adrenaline kicked in. I raised the rifle, aiming it at the ancient god's eyes, and then pressed the trigger. Moloch gave a shriek of surprise and pain as dozens of bullets smashed against its metal face. They pinged, eating giant holes into the blackened steel. The fire within its face blazed higher as the bullets allowed more air to rush in, feeding the flames into a rising frenzy. I stepped side Moloch at the last moment. It ran forward in a straight line, barely missing me by inches. I felt a whoosh of air as it ran past, its metal joints shrieking. The floor pounding with every step as if it had been struck by lightning. The bull god's horns nearly pierced the obsidian ceiling as it raised its head to its full height. The boy ran to Katrina. She was smiling and laughing as she opened fire on the priests and cultists, mowing them down one by one. They began to scatter like cockroaches, running in the opposite direction, screaming for mercy. I saw Snake fighting for his life with the twisted, stunted creature in the middle of the tunnel. It writhed like a snake in its grasp, biting and clawing. He tried to get a hold of its neck, but it wiggled out of his grip every time. Deep gouges ran across his arms and face, dripping flesh drops of fat blood that splattered on the black floor like rain. Even worse, they were right in Moloch's path. "Watch out, Snake!" I yelled. But it was too late. He looked up as Moloch's heavy foot came down, crushing him. There was a wet sound, the crunching of bones. Blood, hair, and organs exploded beneath Moloch's foot like a water balloon. When Moloch raised it, only a bloody pancake of gore and flattened skin remained. "Fudge! Fudge!" I screamed. "We need help!"
"Shh! What's going on?"
the director asked, his voice anxious. "Snake's dead," I cried. "We need to retreat. Katrina!" But she was already one step ahead of me. She grabbed the boy, picking him up and running over to me. His face was full of tears and snot, his little eyes red from crying. I saw specks of blood splatter on his black hair from the battle. "We need to get back to the door," I cried, looking back down the tunnel. Dozens of the pale, twisted creatures skittered like maggots around Moloch's pounding feet. He slowed like a train decelerating at a station. After a few long steps, he turned to face us again. His face was half destroyed, and one of his eyes was a flaming crater of ragged metal now. But he still had his wide grin spread over his face, his iron teeth gleaming. I opened fire on the creatures writhing on the ground. They ran forward towards us in a pack, their sharp teeth gnashing the air, their claws tapping against the glassy floor. As they got nearer, I smelled rot and sulfur emanating from their pale flesh. One by one, Katrina and I shot them, but Moloch had begun to charge at us again. I grabbed the boy, hurling him to the side. Katrina sidestepped, but Moloch changed direction. With his horns down, he plowed right into her, skewering her body right through the navel. She was raised high into the air as his head came down. She screamed in agony, her arms and legs flailing as blood exploded from her mouth. "Katrina!" I cried, knowing it was too late. She didn't appear to hear me. Her eyes rolled back in her head as she went silent. I grabbed the boy and pushed him forward towards the pale creatures. I reloaded, keeping a constant rate of fire. We headed back towards the mummified corpses and computer room. The boy had become a blubbering mass of gibberish.
"I thought I was dead. Thank you so much. Oh my God, they were gonna burn me alive."
He spewed in a stream of cautiousness. "Shut up, kid," I hissed. "We ain't out of here yet." As if to confirm that, as the broken and splintered desks appeared in front of us, Moloch gave chase. I turned, seeing that Katrina still hung on his right horn, now totally still and lifeless. Moloch's one remaining eye flashed on the boy.
"My sacrifice,"
he gurgled in a voice like thunder. It shook the floor.
"Give me the boy and I will let you live. I am, after all, a forgiving god."
I looked at the boy for a long moment, considering it. "Nah," I said, raising the rifle and aiming at its face. "I'd rather take out your other eye, I think." Moloch roared as I opened fire. His heavy legs came down, smashing the computers and cracked monitors into dust. The boy screamed and wet himself, a stream of urine running down his leg. But Moloch was too fast. As I fired at his head, his clawed hand came down, swiping me along the back. I felt a burning pain as deep gouges ate their way into my skin. I went flying, hitting the far wall hard. I laid there for a couple of seconds, stunned. In my dazed state, I watched as Moloch's other hand grabbed the screaming, crying boy and threw him into his fiery mouth. "No, damn it!" I cried, feeling warm, trickling blood down my back. I started crawling away, hearing Moloch's heavy steps pursuing me. I raised the rifle and aimed it at its remaining eye with the last of my strength. As I emptied the magazine, I uttered a silent prayer to a god I didn't believe in. Moloch's remaining eyes shattered with a tearing of metal and the pinging of bullets. His voice thundered in surprise and pain as I rolled out of his path.
"Blind, I can't see,"
it hissed as I crawled away, breathing hard. It felt like a few of my ribs were cracked. Every inhalation felt like fire. I made my way back into the hallway we had came from, searching for the door out. Moloch continued shaking the floor as he stumbled blindly through the caverns of the Badlands. Near where we had come in, I saw a shimmering, translucent hue covering the granite wall. Hoping against hope, I put my hand through it. With immense relief, I stumbled through the mirage and back into our world, the sole survivor of the Badlands. The complex in California looked as well guarded as a nuclear weapons depot from the outside. Black guard towers rose up like the heads of vipers from the gently rolling hills and misty vine country. Roll after roll of razor wire surrounded the no man's land between the tall electrified fences that disappeared far off in the distance, thousands of feet away. The async complex must have cost many billions of dollars to construct, and they certainly had the highest level of security for all their operations. I had gotten a high security clearance from my previous work on physics at the Department of Energy. I had a PhD in quantum physics and extensive experience working with irons colliders. When my contract with the DOE had expired, async agents had been there with the...
Mr. Monopoly here! Monopoly is back at McDonald's! Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to...
get your bag!
Two ways to peel for a chance to...
get your bag!
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to...
get your bag!
Play Monopoly at McDonald's!
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba!
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Contract in hand, offering me three times what I made as a government servant. This work is, however, highly dangerous. The man in the black suit sitting across from me had said, his flat, dark eyes looking cold and predatory. He gave me the creeps. And it is highly classified. If you ever tell anyone, you will be violating federal law. I looked down at the contract, seeing the numbers flashing across the paper. Over $300,000 a year. I gave the creepy async agent a fake smile and shook his hand. "You have a deal," I said, grinning and feeling hopeful for the first time in a long time. I pulled up to the gate, where a man in a black militaristic uniform carrying an automatic rifle took my credentials and identification. He looked me carefully up and down before motioning me on with a wave of his hand. A young woman with an eager expression on her tanned face waited for me near the front entrance. As I walked through the packed parking lot, I saw many expensive Ferraris and Porsches amongst them. The front wall was a fortress of metal and concrete. The entrance to the compound itself looked like a door to a doomsday bunker. It was made of thick steel and separated horizontally in the middle, slowly rising up and down with the whirring of many hidden gears. "This is your first day, huh?" Emily said, giving me a crooked half-smile. Her dark eyes seemed to find some amusement in this, though I didn't know why. "You're gonna see sights, my friend. There are things in this place that are beyond any of us to understand or control. I'm Emily, by the way." I nodded, feeling nervous. "I'm Al, but you probably already knew that from reading my file." "They haven't debriefed me on what is contained here yet," I said. "I know it has to do with the iron collisions and the Alice program, though." She laughed at that. "Oh, I guess it does in a roundabout way," Emily said. "But that's really only a means to an end. The first few experiments were total failures. We had to increase the intensity of the magnetic distortion over 100-fold, and then..." She shook her head grimly. "Well, they'll debrief you on it. But they think it caused a massive earthquake after we adjusted the power upwards. It caused a fire and a meltdown in the laboratory, too. But after the team had extinguished all the flames and started to examine the threshold of the magnetic propulsion system, there was something in it. An obstruction, I guess you could call it." Her eyes glittered at this. "It was a hallway. An empty yellow hallway with flickering fluorescent lights and soaking wet carpets. And it led into somewhere endless, a truly massive and ineffable place. But why am I telling you? You'll see it for yourself before the day is over. After all, everyone must enter the back rooms on their first day. It's part of the initiation, I guess you could say." Her crooked smile looked almost predatory as she walked through the metal door into a massive hallway of smooth concrete. A row of brand new elevators stood open, waiting to take us down into the bowels of the complex. Emily pressed the button marked A space at the very bottom of a long list of numbers. We were on the ground floor. Then there were 20 floors below that, following by the A space floor. There was a smell like ozone and chemicals in the air as the elevator doors swung open. I saw an enormous chamber 50 feet high and the size of a football stadium. It had pure steel ceilings, walls, and floors. At the far end of the chamber, hundreds of lasers and ion colliders were pointed around a small open door. Through that door, I saw a hallway stretching out as far as the eye could see. A hallway with flickering fluorescent lights and piss-colored walls. There was a wet, infected smell radiating out of the halls. "What's that smell?" I said, wrinkling my nose. Emily laughed. "Spinal fluid," she said. "It soaked into all the carpets of the back rooms." I looked at her as if she was insane. "Whose spinal fluid?" I asked. She just laughed and shook her head. "Here, watch this video," she said, pointing to a TV set and a computer chair at the far corner. Near the entrance of the back rooms, I saw teams of men and women clad in full protective suits with the A-Sync logo preparing equipment for transfer into the hallway. To my surprise, they had entire crates filled with grenades, automatic rifles, and bullets. Seeing all that weaponry made my stomach turn. What would someone doing quantum physics research need with crates full of grenades, after all? I sat down and watched as the video started to play. In 1989, in coordination with the Alice program, our company made a breakthrough that goes far beyond physics research. Using the low proximity magnetic distortion system, we broke through to A-Space. But what is A-Space? A-Space is the future of humanity. It is a limitless research that has yet to be explored or tapped. With the exponential growth of the human population and the possibility of a further explosion due to IVF technologies and genetic engineering, our small planet is growing increasingly smaller, and the resources containing within are being rapidly consumed. But what if we could have unlimited space to grow crops, to house an expanding population, to grow the human species to heights undreamed of? Welcome to A-Space, where the future is now. The movie rambled on for a little while and said a lot of other things that weren't as interesting. Though they did mention the 1989 earthquake in San Francisco. Then it cut off suddenly. "Well, your debriefing is over," Emily said from directly behind me, making me jump. I turned, seeing her clawed in one of those white protective breathing suits with the A-Sync logo on its back. "Go gear up. We're going to be attending the entity extraction today." "What is an entity?" I asked, feeling nervous. I glanced at the automatic rifles. I saw Emily had a pistol holstered around her waist and a rifle slung around her shoulder, grenades and flashbangs covering her belt. "You'll see in a few minutes, won't you?" she said, grinning. After I suited up and was given my own automatic rifle, magazines, and grenades, I joined the team near the entrance to the back rooms. The person in charge, a tall, pale man with nervous eyes named Frank, put his hands up, motioning the five of us closer. I stayed near Emily, a rising anxiety creeping over my chest. I felt like an astronaut in my protective breathing suit, too. "Okay, I know this is your first day, Alvin," he said, nodding to me through his protective visor. "So there's a couple of rules we need to establish. First of all, you must never travel into the back rooms by yourself. Stay in groups of three people, and preferably at least five people. It is a mandatory regulation that you must always be accompanied by at least two other people. Anyone who violates this is subject to immediate termination. You must remain armed at all times while you're within the back rooms. Do not ever lose your weapon. If we issue a retreat order, you must follow it immediately and head towards the exit. Run as fast as you can. Last of all, you must always mark your path with red tape. This will be life-saving if you need to find your way back." He nodded, and we headed through the door. The carpet squished under my booted feet as I stayed in the back of the pack, gripping my rifle nervously. A long piece of red tape went straight down the hallway for thousands of feet. Empty rooms lined both sides of the hallway. The rhythmic humming of the lights felt like a drill in my temples after a few minutes. I gritted my teeth, trying to block it out. Up ahead, the hallway intersected into eight identical-looking corridors. A piece of red tape turned sharply at a 45-degree angle and opened into a large room with lasers, cameras, and various deadly-looking traps set up all around it.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
I saw what looked like an enormous bear trap as well as metal panels with long, wicked-looking spikes attached to the ceiling through a system of pulleys and gears. "What are we trying to kill here, Lucifer?" I asked. "What is all this?" Frank gave me a serious look. "T Team Bravo is already in forward position, he said. They are gaining the attention of the entity as we speak. Be ready for anything. The rest of the team shifted nervously from foot to foot, and even Emily's brash smile was wiped off her face. Our radios came to life all of a sudden with the sound of panicked screaming.
It's here! Coming in now!
A woman's ragged voice cried through the radio.
God, help me!
I heard a howling from across the chamber, and then a figure in an async suit came sprinting in alone. The woman's face behind the protective visor was a grimace of mortal terror. Splatters of blood covered her suit like raindrops. A wailing cacophony like a tornado siren followed after the woman. Loping after the woman, I saw a creature from an acid fiend's nightmare. Its long, spidery limbs were inhumanly thin and twisted. It held them stiffly in front of its body as it loped forward. Its legs looked like little more than shining obsidian spikes, like the legs of some enormous praying mantis. They pounded the ground at an impossible speed. Its separating sore of a mouth split its monstrous reptilian visage in the two. It had no eyes or nose on its face. To my horror, though, I saw eyes on its black spiky hands. Each of its palms had a blood-red eye that rolled and danced in their sockets. The creature saw its way forward with its hands, gaining on the woman with every step.
Holy shit!
I screamed, backing up instinctively. I was not prepared for this. The creature's shrieking continued unabated, as if it didn't need to even breathe. Perhaps it didn't. I turned to run, but a hand gripped my arm hard, pulling me back to reality. I glanced over, seeing Emily's wide, dark eyes. Don't, she whispered as a scream tore through the chamber. The creature had caught up with the woman. At the same time, Frank pressed a button on the remote control he held in his hand. One of the traps on the ceiling released with a sudden cacophony of whirling cables. It fell like a guillotine blade, smashing the creature under its enormous weight. As the entity collapsed under the trap, it struck out with its dagger-like fingers at the woman. With a wet crunching sound, the woman's chest exploded. A blossoming flower of blood spurted from the front of her torso. The creature's long arm had gone through her entire body. The crimson eye in the palm rolled faster as the fingers clenched and unclenched. Fresh rivulets of blood dripped off its shiny chitinous exterior. The creature's wailing intensified and grew higher and more dissonant as it writhed under the metal trap, laying on the ground with its arms still stuck in the dying woman's chest. It reminded me of a dying spider laying on its back, its limbs twitching and jumping. The woman coughed, a wet bubbling sound. Blood exploded from her mouth and covered her protective visor, so it was totally obscuring her face under the splatter of gore. She stumbled and fell, the creature's arms still inside her, its fist still clenching and unclenching over that single horrid eye.
It's down! Freddy screamed in surprise and excitement. We got it! Holy shit! Get the trap! Get the trap!
The team scrambled in a burst of sudden energy, ignoring the dead woman in their midst. The creature continued twitching like a stinging hornet, seizing and contorting its stiff limbs to try to force its way out of the steel teeth of the trap. Thick blood, the color of soot, dribbled down its skin. I followed nervously behind Emily, resisting the urge to simply put the rifle to the creature's head and pulling the trigger. Why do we need to keep this thing alive? I asked, looking over at her. She frowned.
Well, we don't need to exactly, but whatever we could take out alive, we try to. All of the entities have a single hive mind here. They're all connected somehow telepathically, like some sort of alien ant colony. The team back Earthside wants to study them and find out if they can somehow tap into that and keep the others from attacking us. I frowned. That sounds totally insane, I responded, glancing at the writhing mass of limbs and black, oily skin on the floor. Frank and two other team members started rolling the enormous metal box over to the entity when its wailing suddenly cut out. It looked up at me with a grin like a skull spread across its obsidian flesh. Then many things happened very quickly. The floor in the room started dropping out in large square sections beneath our feet. Frank's team members gave a scream of surprise as they disappeared, their shrieks fading over a few seconds. Frank still stood next to the metal box, but the room had turned into a maze of carpet winding through drop-offs into a seemingly eternal abyss. Retreat! Frank called as he raised his rifle, aiming at the entity's head. The floor suddenly fell out from beneath the entity. It fell, its black twisting body disappearing from view into the shadows beneath our feet.
Shit, shit, shit!
He repeated it like a mantra as he threaded his way through the narrow paths of carpet still remaining in the massive chamber. As we sprinted out of the room, I looked around, realizing only Emily, Frank, and I still remained alive.
Back to the door!
Frank screamed in panic.
Follow the tape. We need to get out of the back rooms immediately.
He took the lead, pounding the wet carpet hard. I wasn't used to running like this, and quickly grew lightheaded and exhausted. We came to an intersection up ahead that I didn't remember on our way here. The red tape suddenly split off into four directions. We stopped. A rising sense of terror and panic filling the group's consciousness as we glanced down each of the hallways. They all looked exactly the same, fading off into the distance thousands of feet away.
What the fudge?
Emily said, now visibly sweating. I had never seen her this nervous and uncertain.
What do we do now, Frank?
Frank just shook his head, pulling his radio up to his visor. He kept checking his back, his finger always on the trigger of his rifle, ready to start firing the moment he saw anything peeking around the corners or loping down the endless hallways after him.
This is Team Alpha, he said. Team Alpha, we need assistance. We have casualties back near the containment room. The entity has escaped and...
He gulped nervously.
We have four hallways and the red tape goes down all of them. Something is messing with us right now. We need a team to come in and show us the right way back to the door, over?
Frankie waited for a few seconds. A nervous, high-pitched voice came over the speaker.
Shh. Yeah, Frank, we have some problems of our own right now.
The man said.
We'll get you out as soon as possible. Just hold tight. Secure your position at the intersection and wait for orders, over?
Frank shook his head angrily.
Fudge, we are so screwed, he whispered.
Emily was looking behind me. She jumped, her eyes widening. I glanced behind me, seeing a door slowly opening. A low creaking echoed through the hallway, mixed with the incessant buzzing of the lights. A face peeked around the corner, eyeless and reptilian, its head pointed. Its deep slash of a mouth was formed into a wide Cheshire Cat grin. Slowly, it pulled back into the room, as if it wanted us to see it. It felt like it was toying with us, like a cat stalking a mouse before ripping its head off. My heart was hammering a staccato drumbeat in my eardrums. My quick breathing echoed through my suit. I felt alone, like a scuba diver at the bottom of the ocean.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky, and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Oceans surrounded by unknown deep sea monstrosities. It's watching us, Emily whispered grimly, nodding to herself. This is how it always starts. We can't wait here, Frank. We have to go and find our way back. Frank shook his head, raising the rifle. We kill it, he said, his false bravado not reaching his pale blue eyes. We cannot get lost in here, Emily. No one who gets lost in here ever finds their way out. You know that. If you want to wait here and die, be my guest, she hissed through gritted teeth, turning to leave. She looked back at me. Are you staying or coming with me? I looked between her and Frank. From another hallway, I saw the glint of a bleached white face with black sockets for eyes peering at us. Oh, God, I said, grabbing at my head. I gave Frank one last backwards glance before jogging to catch up with Emily. He stood alone, gripping his rifle tightly as if it was a holy sacrament used to drive away demons. His twitching, strained face had turned beaded red with anger. I'll have you both fired for this, he screamed after us. You're gonna die, you idiots. You need to wait for the extraction team. His yelling grew fainter as we walked away down the hall. After a few moments, I was jolted by another sound, an almost mechanical wailing, the predatory crying of the entity. Gunshots exploded behind us. I looked back and saw Frank, a tiny dot in the distance. A black blur ran into him like a freight train smashing into a car. The gunshots cut off instantly, and then everything went silent. The hallway quickly curved, opening into a dark room thousands of feet wide filled with trees and thick brush. Fluorescent lights flickered hundreds of feet overhead. Emily shook her head. Damn it, I don't recognize any of this, she said. Maybe Frank was right. Frank is dead, I responded. Here we're going to be soon too if we don't find our way back. How does anyone survive in this hellhole? As in response, a voice came crying from the dark forest up ahead.
Help me!
A man shouted.
Is anyone there? God, please help me!
Emily froze, her hand shooting out to stop me. What is it? I whispered. That guy sounds like he needs help. No way, she said, backpedaling quickly. We need to head back, right now. We started to make our way through the brush back to the hallway, sprinting back towards the intersection as fast as we could. The cries continued to follow us, and I saw something black and alien peeking out of the rooms in the hallways more than once. Then the screaming came from right next to us. A door opened up into a small room filled with traffic signal lights, all flashing and strobing red. The entity stood there, its alien face splitting into a grin with a sound like bones cracking. I immediately opened fire, holding down the trigger on the M4 and emptying the magazine at the thing. It howled in anger, then, in a very human voice, began screaming.
Help me!
It shrieked in a man's voice as it ran forward, the bloody eyes on its palms rolling. Emily turned to run, tripping over her own feet. I heard the rifle click as the bullets ran out. With a last look down at Emily, I made a decision to save myself. I ran then, and her panicked, agony-filled screams followed me for what felt like minutes. Then, with a sick, gurgling cry, they cut off. I dared not look back, fearing that I would see another face peeking around the corner at me. I had chosen another random hallway. Panicked, I sprinted blindly ahead, hoping against hope that I would find the way out. A pale white face looked out from the room in front of me. I stopped in my tracks, slamming another magazine into the chamber. With a rush of adrenaline, I pulled a flashbang from my belt and tossed it ahead of me, rolling it slowly into the room. There was a sound like a cannon blast and a flash of blinding light. Hoping against hope, I sprinted past the room. The creature inside had a face like a corpse. Its dark sockets of eyes spun like black holes spinning in the void. Its bone-white skin clung tightly to its bones as it loped forward on all fours, like some sort of rabid wolf child. It had thin, emaciated limbs that reminded me of the victim of a death camp. I sprinted for my life, exhausted beyond all measure. I dared not look back. But as the red tape continued its incessant trail in front of me, I realized that I saw a doorway far off in the distance. Through it, I saw a team of Async employees clad in protective suits entering. They began shouting at me, but I couldn't hear what they were saying over the rabid jackhammer drumbeat of my heart in my ears. Just as I got within 100 feet of them, I felt something hard smash into my back. A burning pain flashed through my body as I went flying forwards, hitting the wall. I fell to the floor, looking up at the pale creature slithering on top of me. At that moment, multiple rifles started firing. The creature's face exploded in a shower of bone splinters and gore. Headless, its slithering serpentine limbs continued writhing on top of me. Then it fell forward, its bloody stump of a neck spurting all over my protective visor. They dragged the creature off of me, with blood pouring down my back from 4 deep gashes. The extraction team rolled a gurney and took me out of the back rooms. I gave a long sigh of relief. With the wheels of the gurney rolling rhythmically underneath me, I fell into a long black sleep and dreamed of carpets soaked in spinal fluid and endless hallways that led somewhere else. My first day in the back rooms was finally over. My eyes flew open as I gasped. The cold air filled my lungs like an icy fog. Groaning, I raised my hands to my face. I touched my eyes, my nose, my mouth. Everything seemed intact. Then why couldn't I see anything? I don't know if I'd gone blind. In the pitch darkness, surrounded by only the sound of my own ragged, panicked breathing, I raised my hand. A few inches above my chest, I felt a velvety lining with something hard underneath. I tried pushing at it and quickly realized it was wood. I repeated the experiment on both sides of me, seeing my way with my fingers. I felt the interior of the coffin pressing in on me from all sides. For a moment, I could only lay there, stunned. And then, an animal panic ripped its way through my chest. I felt like I was suffocating. My vision seemed to turn a translucent white as waves of adrenaline shook me like lightning. I started screaming, beating my fists against the lid. It wouldn't budge even the slightest bit. It felt like I was striking concrete. I knew there must be tons of earth on top of me, pressing in on me. I tried to calm myself, to focus on my breath like the Buddhist taught. The panic was too strong, though. My thoughts kept scattering. I couldn't remember anything. I tried to think. How had I gotten here? I don't know how much time passed with me beating my fists against the lid, kicking my legs, breathing too hard. I must have been consuming my oxygen at a tremendous pace. I began to feel lightheaded. The waves of translucent light over my vision seemed to intensify, spinning and spiraling into morphine shapes. I wondered if I was dying. Perhaps this was death. Some people thought that DMT is released at the moment of death, after all, leading to a psychedelic experience as consciousness rises up. Something shook the ground like an earthquake. I heard a deep rumble pass through the ground, currents and waves of rising and falling shockwaves. I was thrown around in the coffin, smashing my head against the sides. Then suddenly, I felt myself falling. I screamed, my stomach feeling like butterflies. I felt the rushing of gravity all around me for a second before the coffin crashed into something hard. It split down the middle, the lid cracking open. I tumbled out into a cave. I looked down, realizing I was wearing an orange jumpsuit like some sort of convicted murderer. From a hole in the ceiling high above me came streaming down pale winter sunlight. Stunned, I blinked rapidly, breathing in the sweet, sweet air. I looked up at where I had fallen from. Stalactites kept tumbling down like guillotine blades as small aftershocks swept through the ground. Streams of dirt and pebbles fell through the air, tinkling against the ground. It formed a repetitive, rhythmic tapping against the cacophony of the shards of stone smashing all around me. I cowered into a ball, covering my head with my arms. Within seconds, the shockwaves had passed by. Trembling and weak, still seeing the white fog of hypoxia over my vision, I started crawling away from the coffin, nearly the place of my death. I looked up at the ceiling, and the sunlight streaming in through the cave stirred something in my memory. I was walking along the crowded city streets. The same kind of pale winter sunlight streamed down through the alleyways. I remember constantly checking my back, thinking I saw something horrifying trailing me in the crowd. Something twisted and black seemed to sink through the people pressing in on each other like canned sardines. But it kept disappearing under the constant shifting of many bodies. The cat-like odor of many human bodies pressed together seemed strong, even overwhelming. I felt rivers of sweat flowing down my face, despite the cooling breeze that swept through the streets with every passing tractor, trailer, and car. I kept running blindly forward, pushing my way through the crowd. I knew I had escaped the faceless men in the black suits, but they were never far behind. They had given me some kind of poison that still twisted through my stomach like writhing snakes. I suddenly felt very sick. I stumbled off to a nearby garbage-strewn alleyway, stepping over needles and cigarette butts. I bent over, retching, but my stomach was empty. After gagging, I threw up some frothy blood. I heard the cocking of a pistol behind me. Still weak and shivering, I turned to see two of the agents standing there in black sunglasses and dark suits. They had close-cropped dark hair. They all looked like they were straight out of an assembly line, muscular, white, and clean-shaven. I could barely tell one from another, even back in that den of horrors I had escaped against all odds.
"You could come with us peacefully, or you could come back in a body bag."
The one on the left hissed, his mouth twisted into a tight, grim smiling. I slowly put my hands up as they shoved a cloth bag over my head. I felt the sting of a needle going into my neck. I wondered if it was more that hellish alpha UBIK crap that they had given me back in the lab, but within seconds, I knew it wasn't. I felt waves of lightness and relaxation pass through my body as my consciousness faded. I felt arms grabbing me as I stumbled forward, and then I remember nothing until the coffin. All along on the side of the cavern tunnel, patches of strange, luminescent mushrooms grew. They gave off an eerie, greenish light. It gave me just enough light to see 10 feet or so in front of me. Strange white patterns kept forming in front of my vision. It brought back horrifying memories to me being tortured by the agents in that lab. Pieces of the experience came back to me slowly, being tied down to the cold steel table and having a needle full of black sparkling fluid stuck into my arm. There was a feeling like lava as the drug had spread throughout my body, and then the white patterns had taken over, so intense that I could see nothing else except for the crisscrossing grids of blinding radiance that streamed over everything. This is Alpha UBIK. One of the agents with a false rictus grin said, his eyes hidden behind his sunglasses. It's part of the new MK Ultra program. Supposedly, it gives people psychic powers, though others it just kills or drives insane. He leaned close to me. I could smell the stale coffee and cigarettes on his breath. Do you want to make a bet on your fate, or do you want it to be a surprise? I remember screaming as the pain intensified a thousandfold. The kaleidoscope patterns whizzing across my vision slowly receded. Suddenly, every color in the world seemed crystal clear. I felt like I could see each individual atom of every light bulb, every speck of dust, every tiny piece of microscopic dandruff on the agent's black suits. A few moments later, I had seen the black hunchback creatures skittering over the walls, silently climbing it with their sharp blood-red claws. The CIA agents hadn't looked back, hadn't seen them coming. I remembered them jumping on the agents with gnashing fangs, biting into their jugulars like vampires. There were sucking sounds all around me, cold, rotted hands untying me, and then the drug they had injected me with made everything seem jumbled. The memories seemed like they were in no sequential order, but were instead just flowing back to my consciousness randomly. A woman in the same orange jumpsuit that I was wearing sprinted into the main tunnel from an adjoining cavern. She froze when she saw me, her eyes wide and frightened like a deer in the headlights. I saw deep claw marks gouging into her shoulders and arms.
"Don't kill me,"
she screamed, putting her hands up.
"God, don't hurt me."
I could only stare, speechless. The abrupt appearance of the woman had stunned me for a moment. I put my hands up. "Why would I want to hurt you? What did that?" I asked, pointing to the scratches. She glanced behind me nervously, as if afraid that speaking the name of the creature would bring them into existence.
"We're not alone down here,"
she said, wincing as fat drops of blood dribbled their way down her skin.
"I only caught glimpses of something peeking around corners at me, but it kept hiding. It charged me when the tunnels went pitch black, clawed me pretty good. I ran for my life out of there, but I think it's just toying with me. It changes down here from a cave to some sort of endless warehouse, and beyond that, there's forests inside a massive room with incandescent bulbs hanging down everywhere."
"What?" I asked, thinking the woman had clearly gone insane. "Go back to where we're not alone part. What else is down here with us?"
"I only caught glimpses," she whispered grimly. But its face was black and oily, its limbs thin and spidery. It had two glowing white eyes like headlights, but everything else just looked black and shiny. It seemed to have eight legs, like a spider. From its elongated, narrow chest extended two arms that ended in fingers like scalpels. It was something straight out of a nightmare.
"That has to be a hallucination," I said, shaking my head.
"Could a hallucination do this?"
she asked, pointing to the deep gashes on her body. I didn't know what to say to that. I continued talking to the woman and found out her name was Arya. I told her my name was Jay. Like myself, she had patches of memory loss before waking up down here. Unlike me, she hadn't woken up in a coffin, but in a room with flickering lights and blood-red carpeting. She found herself lying on the carpet, noticing how wet and sticky it seemed, slimy even. "Well, first things first, we need to find a source of water," I said. "If this cave is as large as you say it is, it should have underground streams running through it."
"We need to get out of here,"
Arya hissed quietly, her face a combination of terror and pure animal panic.
"I don't give a shit about water. If that thing I saw catches us, we will never need water again."
We had no idea which direction to travel. The cavern intersected four ways. We decided to go left, as the breeze blew through the cave in that direction. The glowing fluorescent green mushrooms scattered over the walls gave us enough meager light to continue stumbling forward. I heard something about following the wind if you're lost in a cave, I said. There was a wet fungal smell to the breeze, almost like mushrooms after a heavy rain. Up ahead, there was a soft, flickering light barely stabbing its way through the thick clouds of darkness.
Yeah, but even if the wind does lead to an exit, it doesn't mean it's going to be large enough for us to go through,
Arya said. Well, it's our best shot, I said as we moved forward in the winding caverns towards the soft white light ahead. The cavern started to change into a bizarre hallway of an office building. The stone floor merged with the soaking wet ruby-red carpet in patches and spots. The sides of the cavern slowly transformed from a granite slab to a cracked, dirty wall the color of cigarette smoke. Bright red mold spiderwebbed across the wall and the ceiling, their pencil-thin tendrils disappearing underneath the wet carpet. As we stepped on and felt it squish under our feet, I noticed a smell like blood and vomit rising from it. Above us, fluorescent lights flickered and hummed. Many had burnt out entirely, and others only gave off a dim glow. Their incessant buzzing felt like a drill through my brain. The hallway stretched on seemingly forever. Thousands of identical doors lined each side of it, each one painted a glossy jet black.
This is like one of the places back in the direction I originally came from, Arya said, sounding nervous.
Her eyes constantly flickered from side to side, scanning every door.
I was about to say something when I heard something click up ahead.
I glanced nervously down the hallway, but I saw nothing.
It's just like where I woke up, except it was a giant room the size of a football stadium instead of a hallway. The ceiling must have been 500 feet above me. Who could have built such a place like this?
I just shook my head. Maybe the government did, or maybe no one built it, I said. What if I'm just strapped down to a table somewhere being given injections of alpha UBIK while a virtual reality headset plays this? Maybe you're not even real. Hell, maybe I died in that coffin, and this is all just a hallucination of my oxygen-deprived brain. Far down the hallway, one of the glassy doors opened slightly. Half of a black, spidery face peeked around the corner, its thin mouth spread into a wide and excited grin. Its eyes seemed to shimmer with lunacy and a deep predatory hunger as it gazed down at us. Arya hadn't seen it yet, and she continued calmly walking towards it, speaking as if everything were normal.
No, this is definitely real, Arya said with a half smile.
Not even in my wildest nightmares could I imagine a place as bizarre and endless as this.
Arya,
I hissed, backpedaling quickly. She looked up and froze like a statue when she saw the alien half-face gazing at us. It slowly disappeared back behind the threshold. The door closed with a muted click.
Run!
She screamed, turning and sprinting past me in a blind panic.
It's back! It's back!
The amount of pure terror in her voice immediately caused me to jump into action. Arya sprinted a couple hundred feet with me at her heels. I looked behind us and saw a black, spidery creature loping down the hallway on eight sharp legs that shone like the skin of a centipede. Its eyes appeared to spiral in waves of a harsh white glare. Arya turned towards a random door, flinging it open. She ran through it without a moment of hesitation. Through the door loomed thick black shadows, and Arya's silhouette disappeared from view immediately after stepping inside. The predatory creature stalking us gave a shrill, gurgling cry. It sounded like an infant wailing through a mouthful of blood or the screaming of a man who had molten lead pouring down his throat. It shook the walls and floors like thunder. In that moment, I was only a being of pure instincts. The animal panic in my mind took away all rational thought. I dashed through the door after Arya, slamming it hard behind me in my wake. As the door closed, the wailing of the strange, spidery creature was abruptly cut off, as if we had just entered a soundproof chamber. My eyes quickly adjusted to the bizarre scene in front of us. We were outside, standing on a flat black plain that extended to the horizon. A woman's decapitated body laid on the ground a few feet away, her white blouse soaked with clotted dark blood. Blood splatters surrounded her corpse, as if someone had taken a paintbrush with red paint on it and waved it around. Two small crimson suns revolved slowly around each other in the slate-gray sky. The pale spears looked hazy and weak, like two bloody, mutilated eyes. The sky looked like a solid wall of dirty mist that extended to every horizon. But strangest of all, situated on the black soil that loomed like an infinite abyss in front of us, dozens of rows of escalators stretching thousands of feet into the air. They disappeared into the gray mist high above us. "What the F?" I whispered, looking at the door behind me. It stood in the middle of the black soil without any wall around it. It had no thickness. I walked around it, examining it, but it looked like just a random door that had been stuck into the soil. I felt a pulsing energy from it, though, a power that felt almost like the white light of the Alpha UBIK drug trip. "I think we have a problem," Arya whispered, watching the escalators closely. That same spidery black face was peeking around the edge at the bottom of one, its rictus grin still plastered across its obsidian flesh. As it met my gaze, it skittered out on its many legs at a tremendous speed, gnashing its curving, twisting teeth together with a rhythmic cracking like snapping bones. At that moment, something in my chest seemed to give. The white waves of translucent light that I had seen when the agents had injected me with that Alpha UBIK started again. Before I knew what was happening, I felt myself rising off the ground as a burning pain-like fire spread throughout my arms. I raised my hands in the air, feeling sick and weak as the waves of translucent light pounded against my eyes like a drumbeat. A high-pitched ringing started in my ears. The creature crashed into Arya with the speed of a runway train. There was a shattering of bones and a spray of blood as its razor-sharp fingers easily decapitated her. Her head went flying across the soil, landing only a few feet in front of me, her sightless, horrified eyes staring blankly up at me. I felt her blood splatter across my face and chest like warm raindrops. I felt something in my chest like a swirling hurricane, and the white light covering my vision coalesced into a spear. With my hands raised, something sharp and bright shot out of my body like a bullet, slamming hard into the abomination as it rushed me. It flew back 20 feet, landing on its back, its spidery legs twitching and writhing in the air. I felt a massive weakening inside myself and fell limply to the ground. With the last of my energy, I started half crawling, half stumbling over to the door. As I pushed it open, I kept the vision of my hometown in my mind. The last translucent waves of light faded, and I felt a piece of myself being sucked out into the door, some piece of consciousness that flew out of the top of my head and spiraled in the air like two twisting snakes or a DNA molecule. I felt totally drained and empty, and yet, as the door swung open, I realized it had worked. On the other side of the threshold, I saw the rolling hills and thick forests of my hometown. As the creature behind me pushed itself up on its feet and gave a roar of fury and hunger, I stumbled through the doorway, slamming it closed behind me. I remember walking forward a few steps before collapsing, and then there was blackness for what felt like a very, very long time. I opened my eyes, feeling groggy. Everything looked faded and surreal. I saw the trees looming overhead, felt cold concrete under my back. An old woman in filthy clothes with crooked yellow teeth and a smile like a cat leaned over me. Next to her, I saw a shopping cart filled with bottles and cans.
"You alive, Sonny?"
she asked in a quavering voice. I looked around, seeing the house I had grown up in across the street. I was laid out on the sidewalk, shivering and covered in Arya's blood.
"I thought you were a corpse when I first seen you. All that blood. Whose blood is that anyways?"
I shook my head, rising to my feet and pushing past her.
"I knew where you came from, boy. You come from the Badlands. I seen it."
The woman screamed at me, raving and insane as I stumbled away down the street, simply happy to be alive.